songs are supposed to be sad. She cries when she hears that. Says, come home to me, Dad. Life is older, life is waking me up. Come on, baby, life is not what I want. I cry like she needs me. I tell her she wants me. Oh, I'll never grow up at all. I'm not sure if I want to.
Listening to X-Ray FM at KXRY Portland, on the dial at 91.1, 107.1 FM, streaming online, everywhere at xray.fm.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, March the 6th, 2026. I'm Mike Clifford. President Donald Trump Thursday fired his embattled Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem after mounting criticism over her leadership of the department, including the handling of the administration's immigration crackdown and disaster response. The AP notes Trump, who said he would nominate Oklahoma GOP Senator Mark Wayne Mullen in her place after Noem faced a two-day grilling on Capitol Hill from GOP members as well as Democrats. And the House voted down an effort Thursday to halt the war against Iran and forced Trump to go to Congress for authorization, as a small block of Democrats joined nearly all Republicans in delivering an early sign of support for the war in the Middle East. Meantime, a new artificial intelligence platform called Kali is now helping to keep up to 20,000 students on track at three rural Northern California community colleges.
The California Student Aid Commission is funding the pilot program that serves Butte College, College of the Redwoods, and Lassen College. Kevin Kelly with the California Community College's Digital Center for Innovation, Transformation, and Equity says the program can help people file their free application for federal student aid, as well as the California DREAM Act application.
It will nudge them proactively to say, hey, you finished the financial aid form and you received your aid, but you haven't registered for classes yet. Let's get you started.
Kali was developed by a company called Mainstay. I'm Suzanne Potter.
And concrete is the second most used material in the world after water. And the cement industry accounts for roughly 8% of global carbon emissions. Researchers at the University of Miami are tackling that problem by turning algae into a sustainable concrete additive.
They're partnering with an aquaculture lab on the university's campus in Key Biscayne, which grows Florida native algae for research purposes. Jasmine Rodriguez, a first-year PhD student in civil engineering, says the goal is to significantly reduce concrete's climate impact. And for her team, it starts with the algae grown just minutes from their lab,
which we then turn into a biochar, which is basically like a charcoal material made of that algae, which we can then functionalize, which is like chemically treating it in order to make it easier to replace in higher contents of cement.
The challenge, Rodriguez explains, is that replacing too much cement with biochar can compromise concrete strength. The team is developing techniques to make the biochar more chemically reactive so it bonds better with cement. The researchers will present their work at the Climate Correction Conference in Orlando from March 10th to 11th. I'm Trebell Gomes.
While the technology is still in the experimental stage, the long-term goal is to patent their techniques. This is Public News Service. Humanitarian groups warn of a crisis stemming from the escalating war in the Middle East. In a similar plight, North Dakota volunteers say frustrations haven't ended for Ukrainians.
Following the fourth anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, local sponsors say they're increasingly fearful people who escape the violence will wind up back in parts of their home country still seeing armed conflict. An estimated 500 adults were allowed to find jobs in North Dakota through sponsors under the federal Uniting for Ukraine program. But Fargo's Michael Southam with FM Volunteers for Ukraine says getting reapproval for humanitarian parole or transitioning to temporary protected status remains difficult.
The delays are unbelievable in processing for their authorization to stay here lawfully and their work authorizations.
These criticisms stretch back to last summer when the Trump administration resumed re-parole applications. A court order prompted the program to continue after an application freeze the White House enacted when raising fraud concerns and citing other factors. I'm Mike Moen.
And Washingtonians are urging lawmakers to preserve Climate Commitment Act funds for their intended use rather than diverting them to cover the state's budget shortfall.
Passed in 2024, the state's cap and investment program lets major polluters buy emission allowances, funding efforts like environmental justice programs and rebates for electric appliances. Mike O'Brien with EcoSpark Heat Pump says the Home Electrification and Appliance Rebates Program, which is funded through the law, has made heat pumps accessible to families that would have not been able to afford them otherwise.
It really helps homeowners, especially moderate income homeowners, to say, hey, for about the same price as a gas furnace, I can now get into a heat pump, be doing the right thing, and have a much more comfortable living experience.
Faced with a budget shortfall of over $4 billion, Governor Bob Ferguson's initial budget proposed taking about $570 million from the Climate Commitment Act to go towards the working families tax credit. I'm Isabel Charlet.
Finally, Michigan homeowners are feeling the squeeze as insurance costs rise across the country.
Experts say the hike is driven by more severe weather, rising construction costs, and growing damage claims. Midwestern states like Michigan are seeing higher losses tied to wind, hail, and flooding. During a recent webinar hosted by the Conversation on Extreme Weather and Home Values, Andy Hoffman, a University of Michigan professor, said rising insurance costs can ripple through the housing market.
Between 2017 and 2023, 26 states saw their property insurance rates go up by 25%, and four states, Texas, Colorado, Arizona, and Utah, saw the rates go up by 50% or more.
Hoffman says insurers are increasingly worried about so-called secondary perils, including flooding, hail, and severe storms. Crystal Blair reporting.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And we're the same habit out down in the mud. Glance at your name written out in your blood. I might take it upon myself. Yearning for a restless hell. Call me an angel in the background. So I'm not the one, not your haven at the bottom.
At this moment in time, that is a turning point. X-Ray is at a turning point, and we're not this little tiny startup that we were, the fledgling days of X-Ray, but we've been growing, and we have dreams for the future, bigger dreams for the future that we want to move towards, and we need your help to get there. We need you to call the pledge line or donate online when you check out the merch. This is purpose-driven media. It's needed now more than ever. Think about this. Needed more than ever in the face of corporate consolidation, disinformation. And, another thing that I really like about X-Ray is it's got DJs that are just, playing what they want to play. It's not some algorithm. It's not just like Spotify rainy day jazz playlist or whatever. It's like people are choosing what goes into here, whether it's talk radio like this or the music. This is like handmade. You're sending a message out to your community that you support your community radio, that you value local media, and you can do that right now by making your pledge, joining the X-Ray community, donating online today at xray.fm/donate or calling 503-233 X-Ray. That's 503-233-9729.
This is The Rough Draft. I'm Anthony Alvarado, and today's episode is about outsourcing pretty much everything. I've been thinking about how we have this tendency in the digital age to outsource our attention, our presence, our awareness, and kind of thinking about how to counteract that, how to be just more in touch with the present moment and my own physical body personally, like being here and now. And it's a little bit weird because it's not an idea that you hear people talk about much outside of maybe like yoga practitioners and meditation and athletes. But I think it's like a common thing. Like it should be a common thing. It should be something that everybody thinks about how to do, just like you should know how to like, I don't know, make a peanut butter sandwich and find your way around on, you know, with a map. And I don't know, just, it's basic. It should be about as basic as like knowing how to cook a meal for yourself. And it's just something that I think we didn't have to cultivate previously, but we need to start thinking about how to cultivate being more present, more aware, more here and now. And yeah, it just seems to be getting more true with each passing year as we continue to kind of, watch everything through this little black rectangle of glass that we have in our pockets. I was biking down Marine Drive a few days ago, riding my bike by the airport over there by the Columbia River. And there's a spot where you can watch the planes take off and fly right overhead, so low overhead that it feels like you could just reach out and touch them. And I saw a family there watching the planes take off. Everybody was watching a plane fly overhead through their phone, you know, and that's not that unusual. But instead of watching this like kind of crazy giant jet fly overhead like a story away, like it feels like you could like hit it with a football. Everybody's watching it through their phones and, you know, much smaller version that's just like a couple inches wide. And it's kind of trippy because I think that moment really captures something kind of basic about how we interface with life these days, to our detriment, obviously. And, you know, this isn't like, this is not an idea that's like totally revolutionary. I think everybody's kind of saying it right now. Like, how do we get back in touch with being here now, being present a little bit more and less having everything mediated through our phones. And, you know, I'm just as guilty as anyone else of like taking pictures and videos of moments rather than like sitting with them and experiencing them. But I think that we're at a place where we kind of have to be more intentional about doing so, you know, about doing that. For example, last Sunday, I just sat around in my backyard. It was a lovely sunny day, and I just sat around listening to some good music on the radio and not really doing much of anything, like literally just sitting there and vibing. And it's something that I've been trying to do more regularly, like once a week, and making just a really mindful effort to not be on any device, to just like raw dog reality. And, you know, so the example of watching an airplane through your phone is just one example of something that's really common where we are living on our screens and connecting and talking and watching and doing all this stuff via the phone, via laptops, via whatever devices, that we could be, that's time that we're not like doing the same thing in person, in face to face. And I feel like we're going to be coming to this place where, almost like with food, you know, there's like very clear distinctions now that have kind of come about recently of like, there's organic food, there's natural food, and then there's like fast food and junk food, and making that distinction. And I think that that's very similar to how we could think about connecting in real life versus connecting with our screens. We have outsourced much of our physicality, and now even things like connection, community, and friendship, and being present in the moment have also been added to the things that we humans, in trying to chase after and get more of, and have ended up with much less. And now with the advent of AI, we're in the process of outsourcing our thinking and writing and creating as well. Where does it end? It really is starting to seem like there's going to come a day when there is nothing more we humans can outsource to our technology. And it seems like we're just working really hard to make ourselves obsolete. I think it's time to figure out how to adapt, how to push back, and how to navigate the world that is always going to have these winds and pressures to put a screen in between yourself and real life, or to let a computer do your thinking for you. This is the point in history where every individual has to make the choice for themselves. Do you want to be free or live in a cage? Do you want to be the domesticated version, the brainwashed, caged version, or do you want to be the organic free-range version? And you're the one that gets to make that decision. They say that at a certain point, once an animal has become fully domesticated, it becomes afraid to leave its cage. You can leave the door open, and the animal doesn't know what to do. It's become scared of the wild. It'll just sit there and not realize it could leave if it wanted to. I think that's where we are now as a society. And I think society at large is going to continue to choose the cage because it's easy. But as an individual, I think that we can start looking for ways to break free from that. While we still have memories and can see what life was like before, present moment became so mediated by screens, now's a good time to face getting more FaceTime, more face-to-face meetings and touching grass and getting sunburns and being outside. Now is as good a time as any, because it's only going to get more challenging. Now is as good a time as any to make the effort to reconnect with what's actually real. And how do you do that? I think quite simply, the first step is recognizing how much these devices and social media and phones and all that is costing us. Simply paying attention is being on this app or this game or this site or whatever a plus or a minus, a good experience or a bad. And then choosing to be more present and more in your own actual life. That's today's show. Short and sweet. Thanks for listening. I'm Anthony Alvarado. This is The Rough Draft. Talk to you next time.
Quest Center for Integrative Health is a nonprofit health center in Portland, Oregon. They offer unique integrated health programs and HIV services, non-opiate-based chronic pain management, substance use treatment, mental health therapy, holistic medical services, and more. They believe people thrive when their physical, emotional, spiritual, and social needs are effectively met. Quest Center prioritizes low-income and uninsured LGBTQIA2S+ and BIPOC individuals in need of culturally responsive and trauma-informed care. Find out more at quest-center.org.
Hi, I'm Anne from No Dudes Radio Hour. X-Ray FM holds a microphone up to Portland and is the best place to learn about what's happening with art, music, and civics in our community. Radio is yours.
You're listening to Street Roots Radio. I'm Hannah Francis. Street Roots Radio is a collaboration between X-Ray FM, KABU Radio, and local publication Street Roots. Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. Today, the article we are discussing is called "The Heat Is On: Projection for a Hot Summer Spells Danger for Homeless Portlanders Amid Service Cuts and Increased Sweeps." I have it with me Street Roots new investigative reporter, Henry Brennan, who wrote this article. Thanks for being here, Henry.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're new to Street Roots, and I'd love to introduce you to our listeners. If you could just tell us a little bit about how you started reporting first, what topics you tend to focus on, and what brought you to Street Roots?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of a homecoming in a way. I'm from Portland, and when I wanted to start reporting, I actually reached out to Street Roots about a decade ago to volunteer at the front desk. And then, yeah, you know, years later, when I did my first official pitch, it was actually also for Street Roots. So I was kind of schooled by Street Roots. And then from there, You know, I went on to work for the PBS NewsHour as a fellow there, producing some stories and helping out. And then covered rural health in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley for a couple NPR stations. And then ended up coming back to this area. Worked for the Columbian and the Daily News through Washington state-funded journalism program. It's called the Murrow News Fellowship. And there I covered the Columbia River. Now coming back to Street Roots, this time, you know, not as a freelancer, official style. Very, very exciting. I think Street Roots, I love it. You know, it's done a lot for me, and I think I really believe it's the best place in the region to get news when you really want to understand stuff. As far as what I plan to cover, I've kind of got this little system I'm thinking for what I want to do. And that's basically like explainers on the policies shaping life around our city, profiles of the people crafting those policies, investigations into the causes of growing regional misery, and then dispatches. And those would be from a variety of things, but including from the front lines of kind of what I view as like efforts by communities to make their own lives better. So that's kind of what I'm hoping. As far as topics go, you know, I think, you know, the economists call it the K-shaped economy. I think, you know, a more normal way to say it would just be that, you know, life is getting worse for people at the bottom, poverty, homelessness, all sorts of things like that. So I basically want to look at why that's happening, what impacts that's having on people, who's benefiting, who isn't benefiting, and then what people and policies are doing to address that. And hopefully there'll be some hopeful stories too, because, you know, I know there's a lot of things going on right now that people don't find hopeful, understandably. But of course, there's also plenty of stuff that I see that I think is really inspiring to people. So that's kind of what I'm going to cover, broadly speaking.
Amazing. I'm really looking forward to hearing what else you report.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's cool that you started out with Street Roots too. It's such an incredible publication.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the city is just, you know, we're really lucky to have Street Roots, and you know, I've said that for, you know, more than a decade. So it's pretty cool to be, you know, on staff now.
Amazing. Well, sweet. Let's talk about your article. So let's set the context a little bit for this article. There was a really dangerous heat dome a few years ago. In 2021, I believe, that killed several Portlanders. And now there are more projections for a really hot summer ahead of us. Where are these projections coming from, and what does this mean for us?
Yeah, basically, the story is kind of born out of, I was looking at National Weather Service climate projections, and basically they'd said that this summer is leaning towards being hotter than average and drier than average. And so I talked to, I wanted to make sure I was understanding these right. So I talked to a meteorologist at the National Weather Service's Portland office. He's like, yes, indeed. And he basically said that the average, and this is for, you know, recent decades, the average maximum temperature for July is just shy of 82 degrees. August is a little more, you know, about 82. And so, you know, we're looking like we're going to be above that, which is, you know, already quite hot. So that's the origin of the heat component of the story and where those kind of projections are coming from.
How might this affect Portland's homeless population?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, on a broad level, as far as the way this would affect people, you know, people are outside. If you're experiencing homelessness, you know, especially unsheltered homelessness, you're outside, you know, all day. And so, you know, this opens you up to increased risk of things like heat exhaustion, heat stroke. I should also add, you know, heat, people don't know this generally, but heat is actually the most deadly type of weather-related natural disaster, according to the National Weather Service, their data. I should also say, it's widely thought to be, you know, undercounted, the death toll from heat, because often what it does is it exacerbates or it worsens things like heart attacks, kidney failure, other disease. And so basically, I think, you know, the ways directly that this can impact people are kind of worsening those, what people call like pre-existing conditions, which of course, you know, we all have to varying degrees, people. And then also just being outside so long, you know, especially when you're sleeping outside, so your body never has a chance to kind of cool down. That really opens you up to things like heat exhaustion and heat stroke. And then, you know, as we'll get into later, those things are really further worsened by kind of the context here in the city right now, which is one of kind of cuts to services, like shelters in particular, and some of the more like 24/7 shelters that provide a little higher level of services, at least in part. It's not completely the full picture. And then also increasing sweeps under the direction of the current administration here in Portland. So.
Thanks. Yeah. The heat often leads to more fires here in Oregon. And what are some of the impacts of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was talking to one of the meteorologists with the National Weather Service. You know, he gave me some kind of notes of caution, which is that, you know, while it is projected to be both hotter and drier than average, which is, you know, as I pointed out, that's a bit of a recipe for wildfires. And of course, we also have a record low snowpack, which doesn't help either. But also generally fire spread when there's low humidity and high wind. And so, of course, you know, we don't know how that'll line up this summer. But of course, you know, forest practices over, you know, since really Euro-Americans arrived in the region have certainly not set us up for success as far as wildfires go. But basically the impacts of those on people who are outside, on people experiencing homelessness, are pretty significant. You know, I don't know if people remember, but back in 2020, Oregon experienced, you know, what was then the most destructive wildfires in the state's history. It burned more than 1 million acres. And, you know, obviously because of that, it blanketed the whole region and a lot of the country in a lot of really thick smoke. You know, I remember at one point, Portland had some of the worst, or I think the worst air quality on earth. And so Street Roots and Portland State University did actually a survey about that around that time. And what they found is that about half of respondents said it impacted their health. Nearly 40% reported difficulty breathing. 15% went to the hospital. And I mean, as far as impacts of that goes, you know, they're pretty significant. Obviously, exacerbating things like asthma and other things, you know, walking pneumonia, bronchitis, all sorts of things like that. But then also, you know, there's particles in smoke known as PM2.5. These are basically really, really small particles. But those, you know, research shows will actually, you know, get in your blood and increase the risk of heart disease, high blood pressure, heart attack, stroke, which, you know, of course, in a cruel twist, also kind of increase your risk of heat-related, you know, health issues and death, ultimately. So it's kind of a vicious cycle in that way, as far as the impacts of wildfires go.
Yeah, right. So as far as different kinds of respite that is offered by the city, what is there currently?
Yeah, so I talked to the city and county about this, and both, you know, sent me statements emphasizing that, you know, they're not asleep at the wheel. You know, they're gonna take action to keep people safe is basically what they said. And so you have things like for hot weather, you've got things like cooling centers, which you know, certainly they're opened. You know, they advise going to things like libraries. Certainly you can go to public pools that are indoor, you know, there's splash pads. And then as far as overnight options, while we have seen some cuts to kind of 24/7 shelters and things like that, those still do exist, and those are, you know, one option for staying cool in particular at night. But yeah, and those, you know, if this weather does indeed materialize, which, you know, of course it's summer, it's going to be hot, and you know, climate change is here, so, you know, that is those are factors. But if this weather does materialize, you know, the county and the city, you know, will be putting resources out there, you know, letting people know. And of course, Street Roots will be letting people know too.
Amazing. Yeah. It's impossible to have this conversation without also acknowledging climate change. Thanks for shouting that out there. So what do the actual impacts look like to the people living on the streets right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So the county shared some data about what that's looked like in previous years. And basically what they shared is that in summer 2024, about 8% of heat-related emergency room visits, urgent care visits, those were people experiencing homelessness. For context, about 2% of the county's total population is homeless, which is itself a pretty staggering statistic. But so basically, homeless people, you know, we know that they're disproportionately represented. We know that people are indeed going into the emergency department. So there's that. And then also, you know, between 2022 and 2024, county data showed that there were about 14 heat-associated deaths, with one of those people experiencing homelessness. Again, it should be said, you know, heat deaths often undercounted. So that's kind of an important caveat. But yeah, I mean, we know that it has pretty significant impacts on people experiencing homelessness. As a part of the reporting, I actually talked to the clinical care director for Portland Street Medicine. And for people that don't know, that's an organization that's out on the street, meeting people where they're at, providing care. And he told me that, you know, he spent last summer out on the street treating people, in, you know, 90 degree weather, 100 degree weather. And he was really seeing a lot of people, like every day seeing people who were having heat exhaustion, and a lot of people having heat stroke as well. I should say, really, you know, we should talk a little bit about some of the symptoms of those things, you know, so people know, you know, as far as heat exhaustion goes, you know, these are things like thirst, heavy sweating, muscle cramps, headaches, weakness, kind of a varied pulse, so maybe weak or rapid, dizziness, nausea, goosebumps. And then as far as heat stroke goes, which is kind of a step beyond, really you'll have like a altered mental state or behavior, so seeming out of it. And I should also probably note, going off that, you know, if you see somebody experiencing these symptoms, you know, I think it's pretty good idea to go check in with them, ask them if they're okay, if they need anything, if they need any water. And then ultimately, you know, if they are in a really bad situation, you know, asking like, you know, do you need me to call a Portland Street Response? Do you need me to call 911? Like what works for you? Are you, you know, okay? So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. So important to keep our communities safe. So as we talk about, you know, these impacts on some of our most vulnerable members of our community, this current local administration here has started increasing sweeps, which, you know, historically has made those populations even more vulnerable. So could you talk a little bit about how sweeps impact folks in this context?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that really stuck with me was when I was talking to the clinical care director of Portland Street Medicine. He really singled this out as a particularly large fear. And basically what he said is, you know, folks who are living on the street, people living on the street, keep each other safe. You know, they form community to, you know, oh, you seem out of it, take some water. Oh, let's get you care. And so basically increasing sweeps has really disrupted that community. So people are more isolated, and they're more prone to basically the impacts of that. And that those can be even kind of like downstream impacts. Like, for instance, he mentioned, you know, people are reluctant to get care that they really desperately need, because they're afraid that their stuff is going to be stolen, basically because they don't have that community looking out for them. I should also mention that I talked to professors at Portland State University, one being the director of the Institute on Aging, and the other person being a professor at the School of Public Health, both associated with their Homelessness Research and Action Collaborative. And that both talked about people being less likely to get care for heat-related issues, just because it's seen as less serious, probably. So anyhow, you know, already just all of us are less likely to get care for heat. And then kind of on top of that, these sweeps are breaking up community, leaving people in more vulnerable positions is what my reporting has shown me. I also spent the day walking around talking to people on the street, or I should say a morning doing that, about this stuff. And, you know, I think people also talked about the impacts of sweeps in that way. So with them increasing, I think that leaves a lot of folks pretty nervous about, you know, some of the impacts this heat will have and the situations and positions that leaves people in heading into the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that context. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about this article today?
You know, support your local vendors. Go to Street Roots website and find out where vendors are. And, you know, they are what keeps Street Roots running. You know, they're very important. And yeah, it's a good paper. There's some other really good stories in it this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And how much are the papers, just so folks know?
Absolutely. So they're a dollar. You can, of course, give more always. And Street Roots now accepts Venmo as well. So you've got options, not just cash.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time, Henry. I really look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
You are listening to Street Roots Radio on X-Ray FM. I'm Hannah Francis.
Recently, some music streaming apps have begun polling listeners to ask if they think a playlist was created by a human or by AI. When we hear that, we know what we're doing is only becoming more important. While corporations may try their hand at replicating human touch, we know that a real, live human is what can make the musical curation feel like magic.
Hosts in our community curate their programs with intentionality, purpose, and sheer talent. AI can't replicate a human touch because the personality and emotion behind this form of artistic expression is what adds that something special. Only a person can connect you with the people behind the music or the unique anecdotes of what a song has meant for them, or even just open listeners up to discovering a long-lost or underappreciated treasure.
Even still, X-Ray is pretty unique for the places that do have all live DJs choosing their music. Why? Because we don't tell them what to play or even limit their selections to a certain genre, style, or format. Many stations with similar values at least have a set of music that the music director requires each DJ to play something from for a certain amount of time every hour. We don't do that.
We've heard from countless DJs over the years, including many who could easily get a full-time gig DJing at a much bigger station, that why they come to X-Ray is for the freedom to explore, play what they want, and grow and evolve as people. Art isn't meant to be constrained. And we know we're doing something right when we hear this. When you support this work, not only are you allowing us to do this project better, but you're allowing more people to discover this programming and more creatives to access this opportunity to learn and express themselves without limits.
It's not easy to keep this platform running, growing, or to expand opportunities for folks to join the airwaves on the regular. Help us keep this space open for creative expression and a real-life human touch every hour of the day. Become a member at just $10 a month to support the 100-plus humans here every week. And you know you'll be supporting not just the folks here now, but for many years to come. You can go to xray.fm/donate or call 503-233-X-RAY. That's 503-233-9729 to join today.
Frogs and the crickets and the cicadas. Thanks to the longs and the songbirds too. Thanks to all my music teachers and the beauty they exude. They remind me I don't need to be anything. I don't need a look, I don't need a brand. They remind me I don't need to be anything. I don't need to know what to say. I don't need to know where I stand. I just need to show up for the thing at hand. Yes, I just need to show up for the thing at hand. I'm not black or white or gray. I'm not he or she or they. gay or bi or straight. I'm just me, and maybe that's just another thing to say. I just wanna show up for the thing at hand. Yeah, I'm just trying to show up for the thing at hand. Thanks to the pine trees and the tall breeze. Thanks to the ocean. Thanks to the heartbeat and the spring leaves springing into motion. Thanks to the big spinning cosmos and its do-si-do. Thanks to the emptiness and the energy that teaches me how to flow. I just want to show up for the thing at hand. Yes, I'm just trying to show up for the thing at hand. You can point right at me, and still there's nothing there. And whatever you call me, I don't
tolerate your family jewels. I really mustn't grumble, 'cause when I die, the cats and dogs will jump up and down, and you little swines will get nothing. Though I almost had a weakness.
We'll be right back. Texas. Harder, better, faster, stronger. More than power, never.